Welcome to Red Meat, the conservative news update you need from Odyssey stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in. Oh, the memes, they are aplenty about President Donald Trump building a golden ballroom while people on SNAP benefits are about to go without food. But political decisions can't always be distilled or explained that easily and simply. So we're going to talk about the realities here. Let's kick things off with the Mark Cox Show on KFTK Radio in St. Louis.
The jackhammering, the dust, the confusion, the noise of all places to do construction is happening right here, the front lawn of the White House.
It's a four-year renovation project. Estimated cost, $376 million.
Shannon, welcome back.
It is great to be with you. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I'm playing audio there from construction at the White House, which seems to have sucked all the oxygen out of Washington right now. But that report was from 2010, when Barack Obama spent $376 million of taxpayer money on a renovation, and I didn't hear nearly the amount of complaining.
Well, I think that the president, the current one, knows that folks are going to go after anything that he likes to do that they don't like. And it is interesting to look at all the ways that over the years the White House has been modified, the projects that have happened. And, you know, as President Trump and his supporters will say right now, this one is being done with private money to do something that a lot of presidents over the years have felt was missing from the White House. So meltdowns aside, the project is proceeding.
I would think, because in the past, any big event they've had to hold had to be done under a tent, correct?
Right. I mean, a lot of big events they've had over the years, or they've had to just make them smaller, some of these state dinners and those kinds of things. But there's always that build out that's not part of the regular structure, these temporary structures that go up. Do you know President Trump? I mean, he is not one to stand by when he thinks that some detail of glamour or ability to entertain is missing. So I think there are very few people that would have tackled this, certainly in the way that he has. But he thinks, you know, it's not about him. He says it's a long-term gift to the country that is going to be privately funded and will benefit all presidents to come.
My favorite meme, I shared it yesterday, I'll admit, was the one with a gold Trump Tower attached to the White House at the end of this, triggering liberals everywhere.
Right. So far, we've not spotted that part of the project, but we will keep you updated.
Here's Tara Servatius with more on Trump's big, beautiful ballroom at the White House.
By the way, this is unbelievable, too. After all the screaming and yelling about the Trump ballroom, this is one of these topics. I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't get why the left's screaming about this. Trump is building that brand new beautiful ballroom. He raised every dime of the money needed for it. There's no tax money. I mean, the Democrats hate American history. They rip it down all the time. Statue after statue after statue. They don't rip down, they burn down. I don't know why they care about this. They're acting all sentimental, like, oh, history. You hate history. Well, now even the Washington Post, and you know what? They agree with me. That's, you know, on this one, they don't get it either. They're saying, actually, it's a great thing that Trump's doing this. Construction crews began demolition of the East Wing of the White House on Monday, which angered top Democrats and liberal media figures. But here's the problem. The Washington Post writes, the dining room, the state dining room, seats 140. The East Room seats 200. Trump says the ballroom at the center of his 90,000 square foot addition will accommodate 999 guests. The next Democrat president, the Washington Post writes, will be happy to have this. Yeah, that's tiny. 200, that's it? And they also write, this has become a security nightmare because they have to erect tents a lot of time for the overflow. There's just not big enough for these big state events that Trump throws. And so when you have to protect tents on the lawn that are, you know, yeah, they're weatherproof and all, but they're just, it's a security nightmare. It makes no sense. And it's embarrassing for the greatest country on earth. Got to throw up tents because we don't have a big enough ballroom. So I don't get it. Did you see what Representative Eric Swalwell said? Argued that any Democrat running for president in 2028 needs to vow right now to destroy the ballroom on day one. Why? Destroy it in what? I mean, I get that you people like to burn stuff down, but geez. So It's needed. And folks, you know what's going to happen? I can already do the segment now. It's going to be next Democrat president. The first thing they're going to do, probably inaugurations, is hold it in the ballroom, because it's going to be the biggest and best space. And they're going to want to be there. It's just silly games. That's all it is. Just more like silly games that we put. I don't care about this issue. I mean, I'm glad Trump's doing it, I guess. I mean, I really appreciate that he didn't spend public money. But I just don't see why this is a big deal. I don't get it.
Newell Norman, the WWL radio, doesn't understand the outcry either. And he has his own unique take. Here's Newell.
So I was last night, stayed up late, just doing research, went to architecturaldigest.com. For those of you that are interested, the original article was posted on August 30th of 2017. It was updated on August 5th of 2025 relative to a timeline of White House renovations through the years. So let's talk about that, right? So the first White House was built in 1789 to 1800. And in 1814, it burned down and it was rebuilt. At that point in time, there was a classical renovation, as they call it, courtesy of President Roosevelt in 1902. And two decades later, Theodore Roosevelt enlisted an architectural firm to oversee a much-needed expansion of the presidential home. So it was change, and it included the addition of the West Wing. Design team kind of leaned to a classical type of architecture as opposed to Victorian, and Roosevelt's remodel transformed the home from what they referred to, this is their words, a crazy quilt of alterations over time into a cohesive statement of modern times. And this was in, 1932, if my memory serves me correct. In 1942, under FDR, the East Wing would be added with the primary mission of concealing. So this is the East Wing. First the West Wing, then the East Wing was added with the primary mission of concealing an underground bunker, now known as the Presidential Emergency Operations Center. And since then, in 1942, the East Wing has generally served as office space for the First Lady and her staff. Generally served. Not always, right? So then Truman comes in, and Truman and architects said that it became clear that the White House was in need of serious structural rehab. So early in 1948, in response to President Truman's concerns, engineers confirmed that the White House was structurally weak and in danger of collapse. Some said the White House was standing only from the force of habit. The White House Historical Association, this is what they provided on their website. And it was evident that a total reconstruction of the interior was necessary. And over a four-year effort, the interior was dismantled and meticulously put back together. Notably, this would displace the president and his family, and they lived in Blair House until 1952. The White House that we know today is largely due to the renovation by Truman. So those that are talking about how this structure, you know, hasn't been changed in 200 years, 100 years, I've heard all kinds of different representations. It's just simply not true. Kennedy gets elected, and First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy gives the CBS News correspondent a tour of the newly redecorated White House in January of 1962. And the Kennedys went about saving its historical integrity. And they hired some folks to redecorate the White House with historic art and artifacts sourced from museum collections and prominent American families, much of which was placed on loan to the presidential administration. And her goal was to use the residence to showcase American presidential history. And everything in the White House must have a reason for being there. It was a sacrilege merely to redecorate it. It would be sacrilege to say that they were just redecorating it. It really was going about being restored, and the public was treated to that tour. It continued on through the Carter administration. That's the first time that computers hit the White House, and they started running cables all through the White House. And then, according to Architectural Digest, when the Obama family came in, they called it the audacity of taupe as paint colors. The Obama redesign of the Oval Office, which was seen by designer Michael Smith, included a mix of historic and contemporary design elements. The redesign received mixed reviews, with some critics deeming the space to be too understated. So those of you that are criticizing Donald Trump for redecorating the Oval Office, it's typically done with every administration, right? So then Donald Trump comes in and he declares that the White House is a dump. These words were refuted by many. And Donald Trump, in his first term, left Pennsylvania Avenue for a 17-day working vacation while a $3.4 million overhaul was done to the HVAC system, IT systems, as well as the Oval Office. The West Wing lobby and the South Portico steps were actually completed. In the former, the renovation included new furniture, wallpaper, and carpeting, as well as gold-hued upholstery. And then they went about with the redesign of the Rose Garden. And according to the New York Times, Trump wanted to make the area resemble a patio, which was more closely to his taste. And he designed one very similar to one that exists at Mar-a-Lago. And he began to talk about this update to the White House relative to a $200 to $250 million, 90,000 square foot ballroom. Trump tapped classicist architect James McCreary II to create the new ballroom at the site of the current East Wing. The ornate Gilded Age design of this addition will expand seating capacity, rendering show, coffered ceilings, Corinthian columns, chandeliers, and a myriad of gold leaf details, which is a decorating style that is preferred by Donald Trump. This construction began the other day to the East Wing. So it's just kind of very interesting. People have been making all of these comments. They are, as of right now, according to the Trump administration, no public dollars will be used. They raised private dollars for this, and the balance of which is to be paid by Donald Trump himself. For the most part, no president has been told no. When Nixon put in a bowling alley, when FDR had or Kennedy had a pool, or whatever, whoever put the pool in, there's a basketball court by President Obama. There's been all kinds of things that have been done to the White House. So let's just take a moment and step off of this Trump derangement syndrome train as it relates to this White House.
So if Trump derangement syndrome is alive and well, perhaps nothing else is stoking it these days as much as the president remarking about the possibility of a third term. Here's more on that with WCCO in Minneapolis.
Are we just making too much? Is it another example of Donald Trump and MAGA just trying to get everybody in a tizzy and watching us freak out over something? Or is there really possible plans in place to have Donald Trump run for a third term, even though our Constitution strictly says he can't do that? We bring into the conversation David Schultz from Hamline University, distinguished university professor of political science and legal studies. Been trying to get him a couple of days and love the fact we have him today. So, David, Steve Bannon suggesting that Trump is going to be president in 28. How much stock do you put in to what Steve Bannon has to say, or is he just a provocateur trying to get people all fired up And
well,
go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say is that I would put the probability incredibly low, let us say way under 10% in terms of he'll be president then. And I think there's an awful lot of juice out there to get people riled up, to divert their attention from perhaps a whole bunch of other things. Instead of saying, look at here of what I'm doing in terms of tariffs, or look at what I'm doing here in terms of X, Y, Z. No, go look over here and worry about third term. I mean, the constitutional amendment, as both the plain language as well as the intent of the people who drafted it, is pretty clear. They adopted it after Roosevelt served four terms. They didn't want another president to serve beyond a total of two terms. And that tells us something there. But additionally, just the amendment itself also says very clearly that nobody can be elected to two complete full terms, nor serve a total of 10 years. And the reason why that's in there also is that if a president dies, let's say after 2 years in office, you know, the vice president, you know, can serve out, you know, the 2 years and then for two more terms. My point being is the language is pretty clear in terms of this. And so I don't think so. I think the law is pretty clear. But Trump, he's a lame duck right now. He's a lame duck. And like any lame duck, worries about, are people going to care about what he has to say because he's a lame duck? So I think a lot of this is wishful thinking. A lot of this is disinformation. A lot of it is trying to make it look like he's going to be around for a while and he's not a lame duck.
There are many people, though, who feel like, okay, Constitution is one thing, but here's an administration that really is flaunted the Constitution at every opportunity, and that there might be other ways to possibly make it happen. We get texts all the time saying, okay, well, there's not going to be an election because what he's doing now, including, you know, testing out sending military into cities, is will somehow subvert the electoral process.
Right.
Are those fears, are those merely conspiracy theories and outrageous fears, or is there any truth to that? Is there any possibility that what those folks are seeing is what they believe is happening?
Well, first, I still think it was a single shooter in Dallas in 1963. Yeah, so,
right.
So I'm not a conspiracy theorist myself. It's people are going to believe what they want to believe, and will work themselves up into a lather about a whole bunch of different things. What I would be telling people at this point is that the Constitution is clear. I think what people have to do is to basically hold their elected representatives, Senate, Congress, and so forth, and tell them that, no, we're serious about this. And really, I guess how I'm going to phrase it here, really not give in to their fears. Mm-hmm. I gave a talk recently where somebody got really mad at me when she kept sort of saying, well, he's not going to leave office, all this stuff is going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. And she said, there's just no point, you know, putting up a fight. And I said, go home. And she said, what do you mean go home? And I said, if you've already given up, you've already said all this stuff is going to happen and there's nothing you can do, you've given up and you can't give up. And so the answer that I would give is that even if there's a chance, even if there is that chance, people are thinking there might be a coup out there, or whatever, some kind of military takeover or something. Keep in mind the fact that that you can't give up. The other thing I will point out also, too, is that the Constitution says that the president's term expires at noon on January 20th. And so as of January 20th, 2029, got my calendar right now. Donald Trump is not president of the United States. He is term limited out by the Constitution. Now, somebody wants to come back and say, well, he's just going to use the military to keep him in office and stuff like that. Again, you know, if you're going to capitulate to your fears, then it's all over. At this point, I would say you've got to take whatever action in terms of legitimate action, writing your members of Congress, talking to your neighbors, whatever you feel like, but just don't give up and just don't think whatever your fantasies are or fears are, they're going to happen.
Okay, throwing another one at you, which you just got a text about the fact there is a government shutdown, and that let's say that government shutdown continues. What impact does that have on the midterm elections next year. Let's say it just continues.
Okay, so if you told me that the shutdown was going to end soon, which I think it probably will, but I don't know when, the impact in 2026 elections, probably relatively small, because there'll be other things that I think people are going to be worried about in 2026, perhaps tariffs, perhaps the economy, perhaps they've lost their job, the fact that we've got a major healthcare crisis again in terms of it. So I think those are going to be the more immediate things. Is it going to be in the back of people's minds? If we look at past times when government shutdowns have occurred, the public does seem to punish the party that is responsible for the shutdown. And right now, polls are still suggesting that the blame is lodged with Trump and the Republicans. And so it'll have some impact on it. But compared to these other variables that are out there, other factors out there, it probably won't be quite as important. I think there's a whole bunch of other things that would be more immediate, some of we might not even know about between now and a year from a year from November. Could be what? We could be in a war. Who knows what's going to happen?
Like it? Don't like it? Here's Newell with more on how hard it is to make everybody happy.
Security issues are a lot different today than they were in the time of Truman or Eisenhower or FDR or others. So the necessity to be able to host these things, and it makes it a lot easier to do so by having it right there at the White House as opposed to going to an off-site location. And I know that I could string up a whole line of Secret Service agents to come on this show and articulate that very proposition. I know because I've had these conversations with present and former Secret Service folks. So the reality is, you know, there was a desire for this expressed by a number of presidents. And, you know, this president decided to undertake this. The real irony is that if he gets to utilize it for a year out of his administration, that might be a lot. Right? He doesn't have the benefit of running for re-election. So really, the largesse of his generosity in spending his own money to do this, his time in undertaking this project, is really going to endure to whoever the next president is, and the president after that, and the president after that. It's been interesting to hear what everybody's talking about relative to this issue. And the only reason I'm talking about, I wasn't going to talk about this, but man, I'm getting text after text after text. People, what about the $250 million? What about the $200 million? It's not public money. Do your research. It's not public money. So, and you have the other side that's talking about all of this because they're trying to deflect. They don't want you looking at other stuff. They'd rather you focus on, a piece of equipment there, tearing down the outside walls of the East Wing in order to make the connection and preparation of running what I would suspect is going to be electrical wiring, plumbing, this, that, and a whole bunch of other things that need to be done in preparation for the building of this 90,000-square-foot addition. Let's go to James on line one. James, what say you?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
How you doing, Noah? How you doing, brother?
Good.
I was calling to ask you, did I hear you? It sounds like you be defending Trump. Like, do you feel like he a good person?
I'm not defending Trump as a person. I'm defending Trump's decision to build the ballroom, and I'm just trying to correct what people are saying about this, complaining about this $200+ million public spend on this, which is not the case, and the fact that there is significance to many presidents complaining about not having a facility large enough to host the events that they host at the White House, plain and simple.
Right, but do you think he's a good person, like a good human being?
Sometimes.
man, that's a lot of money. And he just don't nobody really tell him that. To me, he's not a good person, first of all. He's not a good human being just from his past or whatever. But the way he's running things and how he's got people in his own corner don't want to tell him nothing. Like, everybody's scared of this man. Like, I don't understand why. Like, I really don't get it. Like, he's a convicted felon. He's really doing things like nobody else would get away with. Like, what is it about him that people are scared of? That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, I'm hoping you're human. I'm hoping you're no alien or nothing, but it seems like everybody's scared of this man. And I don't understand.
Well, it's not too terribly different than any other president. I mean, think about what President Biden was able to get people to do. You know, yeah. I mean, he got intelligence officials to try and sell, a notion that this was Russian collusion and a Russia hoax with the laptop. He knew better than that. He stood at the podium and said he would not pardon his son. He basically lied to the public. You think that's a good person to lie to you and say, I'm not going to pardon my son, and then turn around and pardon his son?
Yeah, I mean, that's a son, though. But
look, all of these presidents are flawed individuals like you, me, and everybody else. Now, we can choose to focus on those flaws, and I think that's a driving force of what Trump derangement syndrome's all about. People don't like the way that he executes things. They don't like the way that he speaks. And so they just are hell-bent on focusing on the flaw as opposed to some of the policies, the breadth and depth of the policies, and what he's been able to deliver. He's delivered things that no other president has said. Does that make him a good person? Not necessarily so. It makes him an effective president. But that doesn't mean you're a good person. I don't know enough about any of these presidents to characterize them as a good person or a bad person. They're all flawed. Even Jimmy Carter, as nondescript as he was, what did he say? He had in his heart, I just went blank. Even him admitted about his flaws.
Thank you for listening to Red Meat, collection of conservative audio from Odyssey's talk stations across the country. This is the place where we're not afraid to dig in, listen wherever you get podcasts, and smash that subscribe button.